Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. It's very inspiring. I was telling my wife, it's very inspiring to see that there's a set time that so many people in our shul and broader community set aside specifically to learn more about tefillah and to grow in their personal tefillos. I feel like most people, when you tell them that they should start working on their tefillah, and they say that I really want to grow and understand more about my Shmon Esrei, so they'll say that's fantastic, because I already have 3 times a day set aside for tefillah. I have Shacharis, I have Mincha, I have Maariv, so I'll just do it better. I'll just focus on those times and improving my tefillah and take it to the next level. And the truth is that many of the Baalei Machshava say that's not really the best way to improve your tefillah. You really need to set aside time outside of tefillah where you can learn it more in depth and really focus so that the next time you walk in, you'll have a better understanding, just like you would learn any other sefer for any other sugya, go to a shir to learn any topic in Tanakh or Gemara. Similarly, it's important outside of tefillah to spend time delving into the depths of what our tefillos are supposed to be, and that's really the most efficient way to improve our tefillos. So the fact that you're all here, and even one of my classers is not here, and my jokes are not going to be as funny, I should apologize in advance. Jokes are not going to be as funny, words are going to be way less impressive, but we're here anyway to learn more about tefillah, and with Hashem, that's what we're going to do. And the truth is that when one wants to learn about tefillah and to improve their tefillah and their Shmona Esrei, there really are 2 paths about how one can go about doing that. You can do, as Rabbi Glasser has done in several shiurim, and will continue to do throughout the series, go through the words and try to understand a deeper meaning of what the words mean that we're saying. So the next time we say these words, we're not just mumbling through Shmona Esrei, not understanding what we're talking about, but we'll actually understand the basic understanding of the words and also the deeper meanings and themes behind those words. And the Rebbe Glasser is going through the Shmona Esrei, weaving through the various paragraphs and themes of Shmona Esrei, and it's very important and vital if one wants to improve their Shmona Esrei and their tefillah altogether. But the truth is, there's also a second mahalach, there's a second approach that one can take, and they're definitely both important, and that is to, besides for understanding the bare words that we're saying every single time that we open up a siddur, but to also take a step back and to try to understand what exactly it is that we're doing every single day. What exactly does it mean to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And specifically, the portion of Shmona Esrei of Bakashos, the Rebbe Glasser has just begun, beginning with Atachonin and throughout the rest of the requests that we make from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's very important to try to understand what exactly that means to make a request of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To go over to Hashem and say, I could really use this, I could really use that. There are so many things in life that I would really appreciate if you gave me. It's a very difficult concept to understand. And it's a question that's raised even from way back to the 15th century. There's a question that many have thought about trying to understand the effectiveness of tefillah. And the question is typically displayed as follows. There are 2 possible realities in front of me. So let's say I want to tell Hashem that I really could use $100,000. So there's 2 possibilities. Either I'm a fantastic guy and I'm very much deserving of $100,000. And if that's the case, then I shouldn't need to go and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for it, because after all, I've been doing what I'm supposed to do, and Hashem is all-knowing, and He's supposed to give us all that we need, and He's supposed to give everyone exactly what they deserve, and so I shouldn't even need to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and daven for the $100,000, because it's deserving, and Hashem should give me what's rightfully mine. I've worked so hard doing all the mitzvot that are expected of me, so it should naturally come to me, and if I don't daven, I'm not going to get it, but come on, it's something that I deserve. And the other reality is that perhaps I don't deserve $100,000. It's very possible to imagine that I have not been doing everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of me. But if that's the case, so then is davening going to really make a difference? If there's a thing that I don't deserve, and Hashem has made up His mind, you are not going to get this because you are just not deserving of this request, so then how are my tefillos even supposed to make a difference? Am I possibly going to change Hashem's mind by making a request and asking for it, so now He's going to give me things that I straight up don't deserve? It's a very difficult thing to understand, and this question is really originally brought in the Sefer HaYikarim in source number 1. The Sefer HaYikarim is Rav Yosef Albo. He is a philosopher from the 15th century, and he was a Rav in Spain, and he wrote a Sefer on Machshava called the Sefer HaYikarim. And in this Sefer, he talks about various ideas of philosophy, one of which is how effective tefillah can be, and how it makes sense that tefillah is supposed to be effective. He says that many people are asking the following question. In source number one, line the second line, Im shenigzar mei Hashem tov ma al ishma o lo nigzar. Whether something has been decreed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu or it has not been decreed. It doesn't make sense how he's supposed to understand tefillah is supposed to work in either of those scenarios. Im nigzar, ein tzarech tefillah. If this is what Hashem has already decided is going to happen, then I shouldn't even need to ask for it. It's naturally going to happen. It's naturally going to come to me. But this is where coming in there. Source is over here. So how exactly are we supposed to understand the effectiveness of tefillah? After all, if it's something that's a nigzar, then I shouldn't even have to. I shouldn't have to daven. Ain't tzarich tefillah. Again, continuing on that third line, the im lo nigzar, if it has not been decreed from Hashem that this is going to happen, then eich toel hatfilah l'shanos ratzon Hashem l'gzar alav tov. How am I possibly going to change Hashem's mind to give me things that I don't deserve? That's the general way this question is portrayed as these two possibilities. If I'm deserving of something, then I shouldn't need to ask for it. And if I'm not deserving of something, then asking for it really shouldn't make a difference. And so the goal for tonight is to discuss this question of trying to understand how tefillah works. We're going to suggest two main approaches to how to understand the concept of tefillah. I'm sure there are many approaches, and there are probably different ways to explain the various types of tefillos that we experience throughout our lives. There's no one answer. It's not like a psak in halacha that this is the way that we're supposed to understand tefillah. There are different things that relate to different people, and we should hopefully take all these different approaches in and try to glean some practical applications to our tefillah as well. So we're going to discuss this question. We're going to have two main approaches to how to understand the effectiveness of tefillah. And then towards the end, in the last 10, 15 minutes or so, we're going to then discuss a second question which results from our discussion and two approaches to answer that question as well. So how exactly are we supposed to understand tefillah? This main question, if I deserve something, I should get it anyway. If I don't deserve something, then davening should not make a difference. So the first approach we're going to see is from that same Sefer HaYikarim, Rav Yosef Albo. And he suggests that the way that tefillah works is that I change myself. I change the person who I am. I go from one madriga to the next madriga. I go from being a level 14 Jew to becoming a level 15 Jew. I've leveled up and I've become a new person. And you're right that the person that I started out as, the level 14 Kevin, did not deserve $100,000. That was not a thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give me. But at this new madriga of level 15, so Hashem says, oh, let me check my scorecard. Oh, level 15. Oh, then yeah, you definitely do get the $100,000. Here you go. Tefillah is a way of changing ourselves, and that's a way of becoming deserving of the various things that we're requesting from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's like, imagine, as we said, it's Yeshiva week, and I'm sure Disney World is full of many, many Jews. So imagine you have a child who's 4 years old, and he goes to Disney World, and he's very excited. The whole family is taking a whole trip, and they get there, and they're finally in the amusement park, and they're waiting online for their first roller coaster, and he's so excited. This four-year-old kid is like, oh my gosh, I hear Disney World is the happiest place on earth. I can't wait to get to go on the ride. And he's waiting on the line. The lines are probably like 2 hours during Yeshiva week, and he's waiting for that whole time, and he finally gets to go up to the ride, and he's about to walk up. And then the teenager who's in charge of the roller coaster, who has been trusted with operating this very heavy machinery, says, whoa, 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 you have to step up against the Mickey Mouse who has his arm out, who has the height requirements of the ride, and we got to see if you're able to go. And of course, this four-year-old child is too short, and he's not able to go on the ride, and he's very sad. And one of the parents, they have to fight over which one's going to stay and watch the kid, that they're going to watch the bags while everyone else gets to go on the ride. And the kid's very upset, and this happens ride after ride. He keeps waiting on the line, getting to the front, and then they say, sorry, you're not able to go. Maybe you should try the ladybugs, the teacup that goes 2 miles per hour, but the roller coaster is not for you. And the kid's very sad. He has a very poor picture of what Disney World is supposed to be. He's so upset. Everyone said it's supposed to be amazing. And years go by, and 6 years later, he's 10 years old, and his family says, let's go to Disney World again for Yeshiva week. And he's not so excited, because he remembers that it was not the most fun experience. He tried, he waited on these lines, and nothing ever happened, and he's not so excited. And they go, and they're waiting online, and he's waiting for an hour or two, and he's not happy at all. And then He can never believe it. He walks right into the roller coaster and no one says a word. No one stops to ask him and say, oh, stand over here, let's see this, let's see that. He just gets to go right on the roller coaster and he's super excited. And he asks his mom, what's the deal with this amusement park? What happened to Disney World? Did Walt Disney change the rules of the amusement park that now they're suddenly allowing all the kids to go on the rides, these crazy dangerous rides, any kid can just walk on? And his mom says, no, of course not. The rules have not changed, but you have changed. You've become a new person. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not changing the way that he runs the world. He's not necessarily going to go changing Teva because you davened to him. And so now he's going to go changing his mind. If you ask Rabbi Yosef Albo, he would say, yes, both assumptions of our question, of our initial question, are correct. We assume that, one, if I deserve something, then I should get it even without tefillah. And he says, yeah, you're right. And if, number two, if I don't deserve something, then even if I ask for it, it shouldn't make a difference. And he's like, yeah, you're right. Hashem is not going to budge. But that was all within the reality of you being a level 14 Jew. But after davening, when I close my siddur, the person who closes that siddur is not the same person who opened it. I've changed myself. I've gone up to a level 15 Jew. And now Hashem says, whoa, whoa, whoa. The rules haven't changed, but now you fit in a different category. And now you're deserving of something new. And so that's how Rabbi Yosef Albo explains tefillah is supposed to work. Hashem is not going to change, but we have the ability to change ourselves. And he says in source number one, on the second paragraph, Shekeshe nigzar ala adam tov ma, hinehu nigzar ala b'madrega yedua mikishro namasa. When Hashem has decreed that something's going to happen or not going to happen, it's all based on the current madrega that you're at, your current level. V'zeh klal yi'udei ha-Torah. V'chein kishen nigzar alav ra'ama, the same also for bad things. Hinehu nigzar b'yosu b'madrega yedua, meharua u'ba'achana yedua. That's all based on your current madrega. U'kishetishtane ha-madrega ha-hi. When you change levels, you've gone to a new level, you're a new person, then tishtane ha-gzera behetrech letov olera. So then everything's changed. Hashem's going to reevaluate that new person who's standing in front of him. It's not the same person who started that tefillah. And by changing ourselves, we become people who are hopefully deserving of that grand prize of $100,000. Now, it's a beautiful idea. Yeah?
So how do you explain with Moshe Rabbeinu, all the times of Davut Hashem, that the decrees that Hashem did against the evil decrees, you know, the Tete Egel among others, that Moshe Rabbeinu seems to have been successful in annulling those decrees? Moshe didn't change his, you know, whatever level he was on.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that is how. Maybe Moshe became a new person. I mean, it's also difficult because not every time are we necessarily even going to change madrigas. And there are going to be times when our tefillos are not answered. And it could be that our tefillah was not necessarily a life-changing tefillah. Or it could be it was, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to definitely get everything. So it's not going to explain every situation. I think that's why it's important to acknowledge the various different approaches to understanding how tefillah can be effective. Because not everything is necessarily going to explain everything, but hopefully through having a broad perspective of how tefillah works, we'll be able to have some sort of understanding of how tefillah, how the concept of tefillah and bakasha can even make sense. And it's interesting, because I feel like when you hear this, you kind of start thinking, is tefillah the only thing that can change me? Right? There are 613 mitzvot to choose from. This is the only mitzvah of the 613 that can make me go to the next level? What about when I do anything? I shake lulav, I give tzedakah, I learn Torah. Those aren't, why shouldn't I go on a new level since I just had a chavrusa and I went to a shir about tefillah, so now we should all walk out and on a new madrega and we should all get everything we want. Why doesn't anything give me this new madrega and have the result of getting me everything that I ever asked for? And so Rav Yosef Albo says that tefillah specifically is the kind of mitzvah that has the ability to change who we are. There are some things like, just because I shook lulav doesn't mean that I'm a new person now. But there are certain mitzvos, and tefillah is one of those mitzvos that actually has a transformative effect and can change the person that we are. Does anyone think of any other mitzvos, perhaps specifically during like the Elul season or Tishrei season, that changes us? Tshuva is another example of where I completely change the person that I am. And it's so clear from the words of the Rambam in the second source from Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam says, Klomar ani acher ve'eini oso ha'ish sha'asa osan ha'maisim. I am not that person who did all those averos. When we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and do tshuva, and we regret all the things that we've done, we say we're not going to do those things ever again, we have become a new person. That's not me. You may have seen someone who looks just like me, who did a whole slew of averos, but that's not me anymore. I'm a totally new person. And so Rabbi Yosef Alvo says that perhaps certain mitzvos like these, like tshuva and tefillah, which are life-changing and transformative, those are the kind of mitzvos that can take me to a new madriga and make me at a point that I will be deserving of the various things that I'm requesting from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's nice to hear someone say that tshuva, that tefillah has the ability to change who we are. But how exactly does that happen, right? If we think back on our tefillah, so has it really been a transformative experience? Have we really changed exactly who we are, become a new person? It's very nice to say that the tefillah has that effect. But what exactly is it, right? What is it about kvetching to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying all the things that I need and making these requests from him that makes me a new person? I don't feel like when my kids start complaining to me about the things that they want, that they're becoming new people by laying out all the things that they really want, that they want me to buy them. It's not transformative to kvetch. So what is it about making requests from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's this life-changing, transformative experience? So I'm sure there are many ways to answer that question. And we're going to suggest two. I heard one idea from Rabbi Mordechai Becher. Many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with him from the community. And he's had a very beautiful idea about tefillah. We know the word to daven in Hebrew is lehit palel. The word pilel, the shoresh pei lamed lamed, means to judge. And lehit palel is a hit palel. Hit pael is a reflexive in Hebrew grammar. So lehit palel is to judge myself. It's a reflective, I'm judging myself. So where exactly in our bakashos, when we're requesting things from Hashem, are we judging ourselves? So I like to think that when a child approaches their parent and asks them for something, 90% of the time, they know what the answer is going to be. They know if it's going to be a yes or if it's going to be a flat-out no. So if my kids have been eating dinner so nicely, and then they got ready for bed, and they got in their pajamas, no complaints, they were playing, they were sharing the whole day, and then they're ready to go to bed, and they say, "Daddy, Mommy, can we please get a new toy?" So then they know they've done everything they're supposed to do. They're on the right track. They're not asking for something crazy. They're just asking for a new toy. They kind of know that the answer is going to be yes. And on the other hand, if they didn't eat their dinner, and it's 10 p.m. and they're jumping up on their beds, and they're not going to sleep, and they were fighting over their toys all day, and then they say, "Can we have a candy?" So they know that's a ridiculous thing to ask. They're not deserving of that whatsoever. And they can tell. They can tell when they're making requests that they don't deserve them or they do deserve them. And so naturally, when we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and start making requests, it's natural to start thinking back and saying, "Whoa, do I actually deserve this or do I not deserve this?" So when I approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and I say, "Please, can I have $100,000? So it makes me stop and think, like, really? Like, do I really deserve $100,000? I mean, I haven't been kaveyaitim for learning like I should be. I haven't been giving all my meiser, all the tzedakah, like I really should be. And so when we make requests from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it naturally makes us stop and think, hey, have I been a good person? Or have I maybe not been what exactly HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of me? And so perhaps that self-evaluation of Lehit Palel, that self-judging that we do of ourselves, and it makes us say, hey, maybe I haven't been so good. Maybe I should change my life and start doing things a little differently. So perhaps that is how we can understand when Rav Yosef Alvo says that tefillah is a transformative experience. Maybe when I walked into tefillah, I wasn't necessarily being the best Jew that I can be. But after I judge myself and I evaluate myself, so maybe when I walk out of tefillah, I say, you know what, maybe I'll give more tzedakah. Maybe I will learn more. Maybe I'll do other things that'll be more in line with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of every single Jew. And so perhaps that self-judging that we do of ourselves can be a way of explaining the transformative effect of tefillah. I think perhaps another way of explaining this idea of tefillah transforming us and taking us to a new madriga is the idea that when we daven, we're not really just reciting all our own requests, our own words. We're reading the words that were said out to us by Chazal. And so when we're reading these requests, so it can make us stop and think, these are the Jewish values that Chazal have decided that we should be asking for. These are the things that we really should be asking from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you know what? Maybe until earlier today, I haven't been thinking about Bonei Yerushalayim, that Hashem should rebuild Jerusalem. Or I haven't been thinking about Hashem bringing the Geula as soon as he can. But when I recite Shmoneh Esrei, it's essentially a chazara. It's us reviewing the Jewish value system. And every single time that we daven and we review the things that Chazal told us to request, So perhaps that's a way of instilling within ourselves the proper Jewish value system, the way that we should be thinking. So that would all be approach number one of how to understand tefillah, that the idea of Rav Yosef Albo and the Sefer HaYikarim, and tefillah is about changing me and makes me a new person. Even though Hashem's not going to budge, I can still change myself. And it's for mitzvot specifically like this, like tshuva and tefillah, that can change who we are. And perhaps the reason why, the way that it changes us, is either the idea from Rav Effer of it's a way of evaluating ourselves, lehit palel, or also the idea that it's making us reinstill within us, into our essence, the proper Jewish value system. So that's all one way of understanding the effectiveness of tefillah and how it's all supposed to make sense when we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our bakashos. There's another way that we can explain how tefillah works, and this is an idea we'll call approach number two. It's really a combination of Rav Shimshon Pinkus and an idea from the Maharal. And the main idea of approach number two is that tefillah is a way of creating and enhancing a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because how does it answer any of our questions? So let's dive in. We had two assumptions in the beginning of our question. We said assumption number one, that if I deserve something, I shouldn't need to ask Kadosh Baruch Hu. And assumption number two, if I'm not deserving of something, then asking should not make a difference. Rav Shimshon Pinkus says that assumption number one is not true. There could be things that we are deserving that Hashem is still holding back until we daven for it. We still need to daven for the things that we fully deserve. He says in source number three, Aval yesh b'tfilah yesod nosaf, v'hu masha ragel b'sifrei hakadmonim. There's another dimension of tefillah which is brought up by many of the earlier svarim. Shahatfilah hi hashar v'hadeles le'otros shamayim. It's the path to getting all the treasures that Hashem has in shamayim that are ready for me. Perish hadavar, meaning, degam zakai ha'adam ayirei ma'isav, o darkei chasto yisparach, le'eze bracha o yeshua. Even if there's something that I'm fully deserving, based on my ma'isim, my actions, on my chesed, v'hatov ha'hu omeid muchan bishvilo. That great thing that you deserve, you fully deserve it, it's waiting right there for you, it's ready. But lo yavo lo ha'tov ha'hu ala ayarei ha'tfila. It's only going to come if you daven for it. And if Shimshon Pinkus is not making this up, it's pretty clear from Rashi all the way at the beginning of Torah, in the beginning of Parshas Bereishis, where we discuss Ma'aseh Bereishis, and I'm sure we all know from elementary school, what was created on each of the 6 days of the week. I won't quiz you now. But on day three, the Torah says that grass was created. And so we picture in our heads, oh wow, on day three, there's probably greenery all over the world. There's flowers, there's plants, there's fields. It's probably so beautiful. And yet later, in the second parak of Parshas Bereishis, the Torah says, Terem yeh ba'aretz, chol esev asadeh terem yitzmach. Not a single blade of grass had grown on the world. So Chazal are troubled. What's going on? If on day three grass was created, and we're expecting that the world is full of all the greenery in the world, so then why does the Torah say that yet still, days later, on the sixth day of creation, there was still no grass? It still had not yet grown out of the ground. And the Chazal explain that yes, Hashem had created all that. He created all of the plants and the trees and everything, all the fields. They were created on day three, but they were waiting right beneath the surface of the earth. And so all you saw was dirt all around, but right beneath that was all the creations that Hashem had prepared. They were muchan bishvilo. They were waiting. They were ready for us. What were they waiting for? They're waiting for day six. Because what was created on day six? Adam Arishon was created on day six, as well as the animals. You would pass the quiz of what was created on each day. The animals were created, and man was created, and Hashem was waiting for man to be created to come and dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, please let it rain, please give me all the grass that I can live my life. Yeah?
Or was he waiting to create the animals and then there was a need for the grass for grazing?
That's true.
Wasn't really a need before.
That's true. So it also has to be, yeah, because the Pasuk says, Chalis v'asadeh terem yitzmach. Why didn't the grass grow? Ki lo himtir, because it didn't rain. V'adam ayin la'avod es ha'adamah. Because man was not yet there to work the world. So we still needed everything else that was created up until that point, like all the animals which he would use to work the world. So it's, yeah, once everything that was needed to work the land was there, and man was there to daven for it, only then did all the grass come out of the world, because there was Hashem, because there was a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the grass should come out of the ground. So we see from Rashi that there are times when Hashem plans on giving us things. It was inevitable that there was going to be grass in the world. Yet still, even though it's for sure going to happen, Hashem still sometimes holds it back and waits for us to daven for it. So why does he do that? Why is he holding things back that we completely deserve to make us daven for it? So I think perhaps the idea is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to create a relationship with us. He wants us to realize that everything comes from him. Yes, it would be easy if we just had all that we needed in our lives without having to ask for a single thing. We just had everything right in front of us. But then there would be no relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Imagine a child who walks through his entire life and never for a second realizes that his parents are the ones who are giving him every single thing that he has. He walks in from school on his own, and there's dinner ready for him on a plate, and he eats his dinner, and he goes to bed, and there's pajamas already folded up nicely, puts on his pajamas, and he wakes up in the morning, and there's breakfast right there, and he walks in, his knapsack is right by the door, and it's prepared with his lunchbox and his snacks, and he just walks in. He goes through his entire life never acknowledging that there's a parent who's taking care of him, who's giving him everything that he needs. He's missing that relationship. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's our parent, also wants that relationship. He doesn't want us to walk through life without realizing that he's the source of it all. And so sometimes, yes, there are things that we deserve, but Hashem holds it back because he wants us to reach out and create a relationship with him. I think it's clear that tefillah is meant to be a relationship from the example that the Gemara gives of the man that fell in the Midbar. The Gemara says that the Talmidim asked Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, why did the man not just fall on Rosh Hashanah? And they could have a year's worth of man that just falls every year at the beginning of the year. And all of Bnei Yisrael will just bring their trucks and they'll bring their year's worth of man supply to their houses. And they'll stock up their freezers and their storage with all the man for the year. And that'll be it. Why do they have to go schlep back into the Machaneh? Every single morning starts with schlepping back into the Machaneh to collect your man for that day. And you go home and you eat it. And then the next day you have to go back again. Why does the man have to fall on a daily basis as opposed to just falling once a year? And then Zel will come back next year. That's the question that the Talmidim asked Rosh Hashanah Yochai. It's in source number 5 in the Gemara and Yoma. And he answered them because then they would never have that relationship. If all you had to do was just come once a year, then the entire rest of the year, you're not thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu once, because you already have everything that you need. But to go to sleep every single night not knowing where the next drop of food's going to come, and davening to Hashem that he should give us the man the next morning, and we wake up and we say, ah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the man. That's us creating that relationship. Hashem wants us to daven, because tefillah is what creates the relationship between man and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is also clear from the Gemara in Yevamos, which says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu held back from the Avos and Imaos. He didn't give them children, even though they were definitely very deserving. There were our forefathers, and the Avos and Imaos definitely deserved, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu held it back because he was Nisaveh Letfilos and Shel Tzadikim. He desires our tefillos because he wants to have a relationship with us. This also, speaking of the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, this also explains the klala, the curse that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the Nachash. We know that Hashem punishes the Nachash, that he's going to be completely, he's going to lay flat on the ground, and he's only going to eat from the ground. He's only going to eat afar min ha'adamah. That's all that he's going to eat. He's not going to eat, I guess before he was eating like apples, and I don't know, like just like every other person, but now he's only going to eat dirt. And so many ask, what's the klala? Right, every other person has to go to work every single day. You're a lawyer, you're a doctor, you're a teacher because you want to make a parnasa to make sure that you have food to put on the table. And this nachash is living the life. He doesn't have to worry about parnasa a single day. He just eats dirt. And everywhere you go, there's dirt. You don't have to worry about what you're going to eat. So what's the curse of the nachash? And so Rabbanan Mipshitzcha explains that the curse is that he doesn't get to have this relationship. He doesn't need to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The curse of the Nachash is that he doesn't have the zechus of davening. Right? How often do we think of davening as a zechus, as the opportunity to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So that's how he explains is the curse of the Nachash. He doesn't get to have that relationship. So that's all the idea of Rav Pinkus, the first part of approach number 2, that the first assumption we made is really incorrect. We have to daven even for the things that we very much deserve. Because Hashem sometimes holds back those things because he's waiting for us to daven because he wants to create and enhance that relationship that we are zocha to have with him. A second half, perhaps, of this approach is an idea of the Maharal. And the Maharal says the flip side of Rav Pinkus. The Maharal says that the second assumption we made is really incorrect. We assumed, assumption number 2, was that if I don't deserve something, then Hashem shouldn't give it to me even if I do that. No matter how hard I try, if I'm not deserving of $100,000, He's not going to budge. It's not going to happen. And the Maharal says that that is not true. Part of the idea of tefillah is to be me'orer rachmanos me'akadosh baruch hu, to evoke Hashem's mercy, and that He may even give us things that we're not necessarily deserving of. If a child approaches their parent and says, I understand that I have not been what you expected of me, and I haven't been doing everything that you really want me to be doing in my life, but I understand that you have supplied everything up until my life, until now, and I can really use your help. Can you help me out? So what kind of parent who loves their child is going to push them away just because they weren't deserving? Hashem sometimes is waiting so that we ask, and when we are me'or rachamim, we're able to evoke rachmanus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's our parent, who loves all of His children, and we're sometimes able to, quote-unquote, convince Him to give us things even if we aren't necessarily deserving. So that would be the second piece of approach number two, that perhaps tefillah is about a relationship, and we have the first half of that coin, which is that the idea from Rav Pinkus, that tefillah, even if there are things that we do deserve, Hashem is holding them back because He wants to create that relationship. And a second idea of the Maharal, that tefillah is a way of bringing out the relationship of Rachmanus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we can bring out His mercy, and He may even give us things that we are not necessarily deserving of. So that would all be the main way. There's another idea from the Maharal in source number 6. It's a very deep idea, explaining the way that schar works. I think that for the sake of focusing on the second question that I really want to get to, maybe we'll skip that for now. That's the Maharal in source number 6. But that would all be the way that we're going to package the first question that we are discussing today. So we have our question for a quick review. The question that many of the Baalei Machshava want to know is, how are we supposed to understand our tefillah? And there are two problems. If I'm deserving of something, then I shouldn't need to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it should happen even if I don't daven. And if I'm not deserving of something, then it should not make a difference if I do daven. Davening should not help. And we saw two main approaches of how to understand tefillah and how tefillah is able to be effective. We saw approach number one of Rav Yosef Albo in the Sefer HaIkarim, that perhaps tefillah is a change in myself, that yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His rules are not going to change, but I have the ability to come onto a new madriga, and by changing myself, I become a person who is worthy of whatever I am requesting from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And perhaps it's dafka, specifically mitzvos like tefillah and tshuva, that have this transformative effect of changing who I am. And it's also, Rav Albo also says, that it's that the way, or perhaps the way of understanding Rav Yosef Albo, is that the way of changing ourselves is one, like Rabbi Becker presented, that tefillah is lehit palel, to judge ourselves, and by self-judging ourselves, we become a new person, and that's part of the transformation. Or secondly, that tefillah is a review of the Jewish values that we instill within ourselves, and that's a way of taking ourselves to the next madriga. That was approach number one. And approach number two is that perhaps tefillah is about the relationship with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As Rav Pinkus says, there are things that I'm deserving that Hashem holds back. That's how we understand the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, why Hashem held back the grass that He created on day 3. Why Hashem held the manna and only gave it on a day-to-day basis. Why the avos and imos were not zocha to have children. Why the nachash's klala was that he did not get to have, he didn't have to have that relationship because everything he needed was right in front of him. Tefillah is about creating that relationship with Hashem and getting the things, even if we very well may be deserving of them. And secondly, the idea of the Maharal, that even the things that I'm not necessarily deserving, I can evoke Rachmanus from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and use that relationship that I have with Him to get this thing that I'm requesting of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not because I deserve it necessarily. I may not have all the mitzvos and zechuyos that would make someone deserving of such a thing, but just because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our parent and He loves us and He's sometimes going to show us Rachmanus and give us things that we really need in our dire moments in life. But the truth is that while this answers some of our questions, it does not really answer everything. Specifically within Rav Yosef Albo, and I think this is a question according to both approaches, but specifically within approach number one, that tefillah is about changing who I am. It's about taking me and bringing me to the next level. Tefillah is very personal. It's all about changing me. And if that's the case, then how are we supposed to understand davening for other people? I'm sure many of us have a list of cholim that we daven for every single day, people that we wish should have a refuah shleima. And within the Sefer HaYikarim's approach of tefillah, it's very hard to understand how that's supposed to work. So I understand that if I want to get $100,000, so I wasn't a level 14, I daven, I've come on level 15, I'm a new person, that I deserve all this new stuff. So that definitely makes a lot of sense. But I've gone through this transformation while that person has just stayed there. He stayed on his level. I've become on a new madriga, but has that person changed at all? How is Rav Yosef Alvo going to explain that tefillah can be effective when we daven for other people? I think it's also true within approach number two that tefillah is about enhancing our relationship with Hashem and making us have the appreciation of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and now I've humbled myself in front of Hashem and I've asked Hashem for the things that I'm deserving because it's me acknowledging that Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who gives me everything in this world. And if tefillah is all about me enhancing my relationship, so again, how is that going to help some other choleh who I'm davening for who needs something else in their lives? So it's still not so clear, according to both of these approaches, how tefillah is supposed to be effective when davening for other people. And there's an amazing idea from the Bnei Yisachar. The Bnei Yisachar was a rav in Poland in the 1800s. And he says a tremendous idea. And it not only does it explain how tefillah works for others, but it really explains the larger picture of how Hashem runs the world and Schar Va'onesh in general. The Bnei Yisachar is trying to understand an idea about the Bnei Aaron. In the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, the sons of Aaron, two of the sons of Aaron, are killed, they're chayiv misa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because they brought this Eish Zara. They brought something that we're not supposed to bring, they brought a ketores or a carbon that was inappropriate at that time, and for whatever reason, they were deserving of the death penalty for that avera. Okay, that makes sense. So if I go and I ask you, why were the Bnei Aaron killed? You say, oh, because they did something wrong. And the problem is that Chazal don't say that. Chazal say, why were Bnei Aaron killed? Oh, because earlier, Aaron was involved in the Chet HaEgel. Aaron was expected to stop the Chet HaEgel from progressing any further. And since he didn't, he was involved more than he should have been. So therefore, Aaron is deserving of a penalty. What's the penalty? So Aaron's deserving that his children are going to be killed. Of Kilu Ivanim. And the original decree is that all four of his children are going to be killed, and then Moshe davens and knocks it down to two. And so Aaron's children, Chazal say, why were they killed? Why were none of the Navi killed? Because they brought the Eish Zara. Because Aaron sinned at the Chet HaEgel. So it's very strange. How are we supposed to understand? The Pasuk tells us that the Bnei Aaron died because they made a mistake. They brought the Eish Zara because of their sins. That's why they got punished. And then Chazal come and tell me that the Bnei Aaron were killed because of Aaron? Because of what Aaron did? Right? What is it? Were they killed because of what they did? Or were they killed because of what their father did? And that alone is a very difficult thing to understand. The fact that someone's children are going to be punished because of what their father did wrong? Are kids punished for the averos of their parents? Is that how the world works? It's a very difficult thing for us to understand. And that's the question the Bnei Yisachar has about the Bnei Aaron. And he explains that perhaps Hashem works at a level beyond human capacity. So imagine a judge, a human judge, and someone walks into the courthouse, and this is a person who stole. He did something really wrong, and he stole, and they confirmed there's no doubt about it, this person is definitely a thief, and they caught him, and here he is, and the judge says, this person's going to go to jail. After all, he stole, he deserves to go to jail, and open and shut case, the judge thinks this is the easiest thing that came into the courthouse all day. It's so simple. Obviously, this person's going to go to jail because they stole. End of story. Someone goes over to the judge and says, hey, how is that fair? His parents are going to be crying every single night because their son's in jail. Do the parents deserve to not see their child for the whole year that the child's going to be in jail? What about the sister of the ganav? She's not going to find a shidduch now because she has all this baggage of having a brother who went to jail. Oh my gosh, did you hear that? She's not going to get a shidduch anymore. Does she deserve? What did she do wrong to deserve to have a brother who went to jail? And what about his friends? Do his friends deserve to have that on their backs? Oh my gosh, my friend went through such a horrible situation. He went to jail. Oh my gosh. Do the friends deserve to have that stress on their heads? What about his community? We can keep going and going. And they ask the judge, what's the deal? You can't put this guy in jail. The parents don't deserve it. The family doesn't deserve it. The community doesn't deserve it. And the judge says, what am I supposed to do? This is what the guy deserves. And the story is different. There may be some effects of butterfly effects from this person going into jail, but I can't account for all those different things. What am I supposed to do? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, obviously, is more than just a human judge. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the master of the universe, is able to account for every single thing. Hashem says, yes, the parents are going to have this sara, but that's because it's going to be a kapara for something else that they did. They had some sort of chet that they need to get a kapara for. Obviously not as bad as the guy who's going to jail, but to a lesser extent, the parents are also deserving. And the sister and the brother and the family and the friends, everyone to their own extent, is also deserving of this punishment. It's beautiful to see inside this Mnei Yisachar. He says in source number 7, V'hineyem chata ha'adam v'ray l'kabel onesh b'cheto b'im b'gufa b'im b'mamono. So a person sinned and he's fitting to get a punishment. Hine yagia tzar gadol gam levanav, chas shalom gam la'aviv ve'imo, gam la'achiv v'achuzas mireyav. All his family and friends are going to also be punished. What do they deserve? Hine hagam she ha'onesh eno shaveh b'kol. It's not equal to everyone. It's obviously worse for the individual and a little less as the farther out you go. It gets less and less the farther out you go. Everyone, the parents aren't experiencing as much tzar as the person themselves. But in kol zeh lechol echad magia is a tzar. Everyone's still experiencing some sort of pain. I understand that that person is going to jail. He deserves it. He sinned. What did all the family and friends deserve to experience this? V'chalil alomar, you can't possibly say sheyisanshu below mishpat. Is it possible that Hashem just wasn't thinking? He didn't think about the fact that it's going to affect the parents and the brother and the family? It can't be. Ella al karchach, it must be hakol emes v'hakol din. Every single aspect of this mishpat, of this onesh, is just. Dedanin v'oso ha'es es kol ha'anashim ha'makoravim v'ha'ohavim. At that moment, Hashem is judging every single person who's going to experience some effect of the onesh. Umagia lekol echad kefi hadin kol kach tzar. Everyone's going to experience exactly what they're deserving. Umanesh Hashem esvarach es ha'adam ha'nenash. V'al yedezeh mekabel kol echad kefi hatzar ha'magia lo ba'avro chet shechata ba'atzmo. So he's essentially saying that yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish this individual, this guy's going to go to jail, but yeah, the parents do deserve some sort of tzar, and the family and the friends and the community, everyone's getting exactly what they deserve. Hashem is this master plan, has a whole network of this person's relationships, and everyone's getting exactly what they deserve. So how does this connect to tefillah? Uve'im haya bechabura halazu afilu ish echad she'eno ro'i lekabel hatzar. Let's say the parents go and they daven, and they become a new person. And now they're not deserving to have a son who goes to jail. So now what happens? Hashem had everything worked out. The parents are going to get this because they deserve that. The family, the friends, everyone gets this because they deserve that. And then the parents come and they daven. So Hashem has to rethink. Oh my gosh, I can't make the parents have a child who's in jail. They don't deserve that. Memela yinatzel gam ha'ish ha'chote me ha'onesh ha'kavu alo begof u'memamon. Memela, once one person in that entire network is no longer deserving the tzar that Hashem had initially planned was ra'i for that person, once they fall off the picture, so then everyone goes away and Hashem has to recalculate everything. So that person's not going to go to jail anymore. Because if that person goes to jail, it impacts the parents and the friends and the family. But now that they've all changed who they are, so now Hashem says that person can't go to jail. Hashem has to change everything. And that master plan also explains the Bnei Aaron. So yes, when Aaron sinned, he did the Chet HaEgel, and he didn't deserve to die. It wasn't that bad in Hashem's eyes. But he deserved to be a parent who lost his children, who had Kilo Ibanim, Rachmana Litzlan. But Hashem can't just go punishing Bnei Aaron. What did they do? They didn't deserve anything. They didn't do anything wrong. But once they bring the Esh Zara, now they're deserving. So now Hashem's whole master plan works. Hashem punishes Aaron because of the Chet HaEgel. Hashem punishes the Bnei Aaron because of the Esh Zara that they brought. And Aaron, the Bnei Aaron, deserved to be killed. Aaron deserves to be a person who goes through that Zara. And Amela, everything works out. That's the beautiful way that the Bnei Yisachar explains the how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is thinking about every single ancillary effect of the Onesh that he doles out to each individual. And so that's how tefillah would work also when we daven for someone else and we daven to Hashem and I become a new person. So yeah, the chotla hasn't changed. But do I deserve to be a person who has a friend, a family member, a community member who's going through that tzara? By davening and becoming a level 15 Jew, maybe a level 14 Jew deserves to have a friend who's going through that experience. But at the new madriga that I'm on, I'm no longer deserving. And the mela, the chotla, also has to get healed. Hashem has to recalculate every single thing. So that would be one, it's an incredible idea, which explains a lot, and also explains an idea of how davening would work for others. So that would all be approach number one. I see that we're almost out of time, but a second way of answering this question of davening for others is perhaps that yes, tefillah is about me growing. It makes me a better person. It makes me closer and enhances my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But why did all that happen? Why did I become a better person? Why did I transform myself? All because I was inspired by that chola. Ah, what a tremendous zechus for the chola. And that zechus that I improved myself. Yes, my tefillos are improving me and they're not improving him. But that personal growth that I experienced, the chola was the conduit for that growth. And that would be the zechus. And that's also towards the very end of source number 8, Reb Moshe and Netshuva says an idea along these lines as well. Towards the very end, when I experience the pain of my friend, I have now been mekayim a mitzvah. And since I became that mitzvah, who's zechus? That becomes a zechus that person, that chola, should receive a refuah. So to quickly review and recap a lot of stuff that we covered today. First question that we were talking about was how does tefillah work? And there were two pieces of that puzzle. On the one hand, if I'm deserving of something, I shouldn't need to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I should get it anyway. On the other hand, if I'm not deserving of something, then even if I ask, it should not make a difference. I can't change Hashem's mind. We had two main approaches to answering that question. The first approach was Rav Yosef Albo in the Sefer HaYikarim, that yes, I wasn't deserving originally, but tefillah changes who I am. It makes me a person who is deserving, because tefillah and tshuva are mitzvos that are transformative and change the essence of who we are and make us that new madriga that is deserving of the $100,000. And that transformation happens, as Rabbi Becher said, that we are self-evaluating ourselves, and perhaps also that we are instilling within ourselves the Jewish values. And that's approach number one. And approach number two, that tefillah is about the relationship that we create with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rav Pinkus says that the first assumption is really incorrect, that there are things that we deserve that Hashem holds back and waits for our tefillos, like in Sefer Bereishis with the grass, like with the mon, like with the nachash's klala, like the avos and himos, that Hashem holds back the things that we deserve so we can create that relationship with Him. And that idea from the Maharal, that there are things that we may not be deserving, but we can utilize this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and evoke His Rachmanos to get the things that we may not necessarily have all the schar to back up that request. And then we finally saw the second question of, based on all of this, that tefillah is about me and changing me, how does it work when I dive in for other people? And so we had this fascinating idea from the Bnei Yisachar. Sorry, I keep saying fascinating, because I literally love it. The Bnei Yisachar says that I change myself, and now I become a person who's not deserving to have a friend who's in that tzara, and because of that, Hashem Mamela has to recalculate everything, and that person's tzara is going to naturally fall away. And the second idea, which we saw from Rav Moshe as well, that I grew personally, and that made me a new person, but that was all because of the chola. And that becomes as a chus for the chola, that he was the reason why I was able to grow. And so, Mirza Hashem, this should be more than just a broad, abstract discussion about how tefillah works. We should really take this with us the next time we go and daven and open up a siddur and think, is this really the transformative experience that Rav Yosef Albo says that tefillah is supposed to be? What can we do to make our tefillos really life-changing, as Rav Yosef Albo said? We can self-evaluate ourselves and instill within ourselves the Jewish values. And we can also acknowledge that tefillah is a relationship with Hashem, and we even have the ability to request things that He may not think that we necessarily deserve. And with all of that, Amir Hashem, our tefillah should be niskavel. We should be zocha to experience that life-changing experience of tefillah and have all of our tefillos answered, all of our personal tefillos and our broad communal tefillos, and be zocha to have the geula b'mehera v'yameinu.